You are listening to Primary Care Perspectives, a podcast where pediatric experts from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and other guests discuss primary care issues that are on their minds and the hot topics that all pediatricians see affecting their daily practice. This podcast is for general informational and educational purposes only and is not to be considered as medical advice for any particular patient. Clinicians must rely on their own informed clinical judgment in making recommendations to their patients. Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Lockwood, a primary care pediatrician at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and today I'm talking about medical legal partnerships. Joining me, I have two attorneys from the medical legal partnership at the Karabatz Primary Care Center and with Community Legal Services of Philadelphia. So please welcome to the podcast Osorogwai Osaido and Andrew Yang. Welcome.
Thanks, Katie.
Thanks, Katie.
Nice to be here.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining me. We know that CHOP began a medical legal partnership pilot in 2015, which has since grown into a multi-partner effort with the University of Pennsylvania's Law School Interdisciplinary Child Advocacy Clinic and Community Legal Services of Philadelphia that we call the Family Justice Partnership. The MLP model embeds lawyers into healthcare settings to support patients and their families with critical legal needs. While this all sounds really interesting and exciting, many people might not really understand the nuts and bolts of what this means and what actually happens in practice. So let's go through some of those, and I'm hoping we can start by you giving us some examples of the types of legal needs that arise in the healthcare setting that something like a medical legal partnership can help us address better.
Certainly. I'll go ahead and start and then hand it over to Andrew. Again, Katie, thanks so much for having us here. My name is Osorogwai Osaido. I am a housing attorney for the medical legal partnership between the Karabatz Pediatric Center and Community Legal Services. And I can tell you there are a lot of issues that can come up in a medical setting that can be addressed by legal means. A lot of issues that people wouldn't think of. I think in the housing context, the thing that comes to mind mostly for people is housing insecurity and instability, so affordability of housing, if you are in danger of being evicted or if the rent is rising and you and the family are not able to pay it, that can come up and it can lead to stress in a medical environment, especially because with housing insecurity comes the inability to really keep up with medical appointments, to keep up with recommendations from the provider. But then we also see, especially in Philadelphia, which has pretty old housing stock, a lot of people who are dealing with health-harming housing conditions. And that's actually the bulk of the housing work that I do at the Medical Legal Partnership. Folks who have mold in their homes, lead, pest infestation, such as mice, cockroaches, rats, inadequate utilities, like lack of heat in the winter. And we sort of step in to try to address those issues because we know those issues can also affect health. CLS is a pretty large organization that has several different departments. So I work at the MLP out of the landlord-tenant housing department. There's also a homeownership and consumer rights housing department, and they focus mostly on tangled titles. So if we have folks who inherited a home from a family member but are not sure who owns the home, what they have the right to do with the home, folks who are facing mortgage foreclosure, consumer issues such as student loans or other issues with debt, and then, you know, adjacent to that, both in the landlord-tenant and the homeownership space is utilities, affordability of utilities, whether folks need to get on any of the affordability programs for PGW, for PICO, for water, if folks are facing a shutoff, which can really impact health, especially if there's medical equipment at the home that requires, you know, electricity, et cetera. And so those are some of the areas that I can speak to, and I know Andrew can speak to other areas.
Yeah, definitely. Osorogwai, I like that you keep tying it back to how these legal needs are related to health. That's one of the great things about this position working in MLP, the idea that these housing issues are related to a patient's health. Frequently, specialists, as we have to be, doctors, lawyers, we draw bright lines over where our influence begins and ends, but people's lives are more complicated than that. So just like Osorgwe is saying, housing affects health. Similarly, I focus on public benefits. So I might be assisting somebody with appealing a Medicaid denial because access to health insurance affects your health. Nutrition, SNAP, disability benefits, cash assistance, those are all within the purview of public benefits. And having access to that can be the difference between having enough money to pay for essential needs, to keep your family healthy, and it's all interconnected. And that's the approach that we take in this work, which is pretty great.
Yeah, that's a really awesome program that we have as an option for our patients, because as you mentioned, these realms are so interconnected. And if we are treating someone for asthma, but they go home to a home that has mold, or maybe their housing is unstable and they're moving between different homes and they have medications in different places that they can't access, there's so many different layers to this, as you mentioned. And we're so grateful to have your support to help with these legal issues that we as physicians and advanced practice providers aren't as savvy as navigating, and having your expertise is really invaluable. But I'm wondering if you can help walk us through what this looks like in action, because some people may be wondering how lawyers and providers are interacting in a clinic. So I'm thinking things like, how is the legal need identified typically? And then how are you getting connected to the patient? And is this relationship extending beyond the clinic environment?
Yeah, absolutely. I like that you brought up asthma because that's actually a fantastic example. So if a patient were to come in, let's say it's a child patient with chronic asthma with frequent exacerbations of this asthma, how would that person be connected to our legal services? How is the medical staff assisting them? So all of that is connected. Osorgwe might be able to speak to this a little more too, but asthma is actually a serious problem in aging housing in West Philadelphia, where Karabatz is. So asthma has a housing component. Asthma might also have a public benefits component. Somebody who has those chronic exacerbations of asthma might be eligible for disability, for instance. Mm-hmm. So a patient who has asthma might come in. They might speak to their provider. In the course of a conversation with that provider, the provider might identify, or something might come up in that conversation pointing to problems with their house, things that their landlord aren't doing. The provider might see that their asthma is quite severe, so this person might be eligible for disability. So the provider might pull in social work, the provider might talk to one of us, or the social worker might further that conversation, figure out what's going on, and based on that conversation, pull in us, you know, ask us how we might be able to help this patient. And from there, Sarugoy might be helping with the housing component, I might be helping with the public benefits component. And through all of us working together, we can work to improve this person's life and health. Osorgwe, do you have anything to add to that?
Sure. And I loved that you mentioned, Andrew, that this really is a team effort, because it really is. At every step, we are relying on the members who are outside of our specialty to sort of get patient families to the right place. And so the provider's role is to be knowledgeable enough and just connected enough with our program to be aware of when a medical issue might be supported by some legal work. And when that happens, the critical next step is getting social work involved. And the reason social work is so important to the Karabatz MLP model specifically is because, you know, Andrew and I work in public interest law. And so a lot of our work is straight legal work, but it oftentimes overlaps with what a lot of people would consider social work. And so the social workers are really well trained and are sort of experts in triage and just trying to figure out, you know, what can be addressed through giving resources and information versus what needs legal intervention. So it's really the social worker's responsibility to then pass the case on to us, which includes getting permission from the family to share certain information so that we can then reach out directly to the family to conduct an intake.
That's great. We love our social work colleagues and appreciate their help in this process. I imagine that after you've been connected with the patient and their family, that this relationship extends beyond the clinic in that much legal work potentially is happening. Is there a closed loop where you then come back to the provider to let them know what's happened in this case?
Yes. There are a few ways that we do that. So like I mentioned before, the social work and medical team get permission to share, you know, some information with us so that we can get started on the case. We do through REDCap referrals. Once the provider connects the family with social work will send us a referral with just some information and permissions. And then once the referral comes through our email, we click on the referral just to say that we have received it. And then we also let social work know when we've been able to connect with the family. And then as we're working with the family, we also ask the family for permission to share progress back to social work and the medical provider, and to possibly all work together if it's an issue where somebody, you know, needs a med cert, or if it's a, you know, PHA reasonable accommodation transfer, where we want to speak with the provider who would be filling out the form so they know exactly what to write to make sure that this family gets, you know, the reasonable accommodation they need, things like that. We do work back with the clinical team for that, and we just need to make sure, you know, health information is very protected, legal information is very protected, so we always want to make sure that we have permissions going both ways so that we can continue working with the team.
That's great. And yes, those forms can be complicated sometimes, so we always appreciate your guidance in helping us make sure that we get the medical information that will benefit the patient and is really going to explain the situation appropriately in legal terms too. So I mentioned that this started as a pilot in 2015 and has certainly grown since then. I'm wondering how you've measured the impact of it and what sort of data you've gathered.
We have an information tracking program called Legal Server, and it measures impact in a few different ways. In the housing context, when we are done working on a case and we close the case out, it asks us, okay, you know, this was a housing case, what was the outcome? And we sort of select what outcomes happened. So if there were housing conditions that were improved, if there was money that was saved, if we were able to move the family to a home with better conditions, we measure those outcomes. We also measure financial impact. So if it was a case where we were defending against eviction for non-payment of rent, or if we needed to get rental assistance, how much were we able to save the family, waive rent costs, or make the family in terms of assistance? We also measure impact having to do with the number of people that were impacted. So for example, if we close, you know, three cases where there are three children affected in the first case and there were four children affected in the next case and then two in the next case, we also measure the impact to the families as a whole. And then occasionally, and this is more anecdotally, when we circle back with the provider and the social worker and say, you know, we have completed the legal part of the case, we sometimes hear back from the provider, you know, thank you so much because they're showing up for their appointments again, or we're seeing, you know, the severity of medication go down. And so that is more anecdotal, but then we do have specific ways within a legal server that we track outcomes as well.
Yeah. And similarly, from a public benefit standpoint, through our legal software, we can note the financial outcomes. For instance, if somebody has access to monthly cash assistance or monthly disability, there's a dollar amount to that. The nature of any of the cases that we take mean that we might be assisting somebody for months because the case might be more involved. But we also try to help incidentally. We record when we get a brief consult or when there's a conversation between us and a social worker or provider about a client where we're just giving advice. So we note how many of those come through our door. And at the same time, there are probably intangible impacts that are harder to measure. Just like Asarga was saying, when a doctor is grateful because a patient is able to show up more consistently. One of our colleagues who is in another MLP in South Philly could probably measure impacts based on the gifts of fruit he gets from grateful patients. It's probably worth it also to mention that our assistance at the health centers doesn't just extend to helping patients. Just like you were saying, Katie, a lot of these legal processes can be complex. So one of the benefits of our being there might be just that a social worker or provider might be able to pop in and be like, hey, so what are the listing requirements for asthma? And I'll be like, well, how many ER visits have they had in the past 6 months? Mm-hmm. Or they might ask about a form and we might be able to casually give advice. And related to that are formal trainings that we give so that providers and social workers might be better equipped to identify these issues. And that's an important part of our work as well.
And what's some of the feedback that you've heard from providers or social workers about this program and the impact that they've seen on their patients' health?
One of the things that I've heard from clinicians has been how grateful they are, especially in South Philadelphia, where we also operate an MLP, is how grateful they are to have more resources, especially for their immigrant and refugee patients. Frequently, I think medical providers run up against the limits of what they feel they can provide. And this is just another extension of the care that the doctors are already providing and feeling toward their patients. So it's another net. It's another thing that they can help with. And I think it's been meaningful to me to hear the doctors talk about how good it has been to have access to that. Just the fact that we're there and the fact that there's somebody else who's there to care for these people that we all care for. So that's a big part of it for me, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Having been a provider in South Philadelphia before the MLP, I can say I can really identify how helpful this would have been, particularly, as you said, for refugee and immigrant families. And sometimes, as you mentioned, there's only so much we can do on the medical side without having that legal partnership and extending that care. So that's such an amazing service. What if a listener doesn't have a medical legal partnership model in their office, but maybe wants to offer this resource to their patients? How do you get something like this started?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Andrew and I have fully drank the medical legal partnership Kool-Aid, so we think everybody should have one. The more we're able to use this model in different medical settings, the better. I think that the first step in even just starting conversations about establishing a medical legal partnership in a medical center is having what we would call a medical champion. And that is just basically somebody from the provider side who can really be an advocate for this program. Someone who has seen the way in which the program could, you know, help their patients. It's a lot of work to start a medical legal partnership. Like you mentioned, Katie, we started as a pilot in 2015, and it's taken us, you know, years to grow to this point. So it is really important to have a medical champion in your corner willing to see the program through. I would say, in addition to a medical champion, seeking out a legal services organization that would be interested in partnering with you. There are many different types of medical legal partnerships, and you can focus on many different populations. Ours is, of course, a pediatrics-focused medical legal partnership because our partner is a pediatric hospital, but MLPs around the country have been focused on different populations, on senior populations, on populations of patients who are HIV positive. So it's really up to you to determine the population that you feel within your own practice would be best served by additional legal services, excuse me. We always, all the time, every minute of every day, have to think about funding. If you're going to bring in, you know, different professionals, you'll need funding for their work, space, funding for trainings, really just funding to make sure that the program is well supported to really do the work that it needs to do. And so that's, you know, that's obviously between your medical center and the legal services provider, how that happens, but it is something that you'll have to think about if you want to start an MLP. It does require good planning around funding and especially long-term funding.
Yeah, definitely adding to that, I like, Asargwe, that you're mentioning being aware of what's happening in the community around you. In terms of starting an MLP, one of the ground level things I think is just adopting this posture of being sensitive to the community needs and what your patients need. Starting from there and cultivating that attitude of that holistic care, and from there building partnerships with organizations that might be also trying to assist the populations that you're trying to help. One of the great things about the MLPs that already exist is that they do have these focuses, just like Asargwe was saying, where they were started with these focuses that were based on these community needs, housing in West Philly or immigrant and refugee assistance in South Philly. These needs were felt by the community, and because they were felt by the community, they were felt by the health center. And because of that and the partnerships that were cultivated, these MLPs kind of were able to start growing. And obviously, there are administrative and financial things to deal with from that point on, but it starts with just having your ear to the ground and being attentive to what your community needs.
Right. Yeah, I love that. Having a culturally responsive approach to the community in which you practice is important in understanding what their legal needs may or may not be. So as we wrap up, we've covered a lot today. What are some of the top key takeaways that you want pediatricians to know about medical legal partnerships?
So much of what's important and essential to MLPs in terms of being sensitive to the patients and the communities, I feel like I've seen already in pediatricians. Pediatricians are great people. Let me start by saying that. But one of the reasons that I think pediatricians are great is because so much of this is already intuitive to them. Just for instance, the importance of nutrition. You can look at medical journal paper after paper talking about how nutrition affects children developmentally and how access to nutrition is important. And it's already intuitive, this idea that access to nutrition is not just a matter of, you know, health, but is a matter of legal access. It's a matter of social access. It's a matter of how close the grocery or corner store is to you. It's a matter of whether you have access to SNAP food stamps. Mm-hmm. I feel like for so many pediatricians, the groundwork of this posture of being aware of the social determinants of health is already present. The thing I would want pediatricians to remember is that they're not alone, and they don't have to be. They're not the only people caring for children. And I would encourage them to cultivate these relationships with potential legal partners so we can work together to provide these resources to care for our children.
Yep. And just jumping off of that, Andrew, I would say the same thing. I want the pediatricians to know that we're not just a resource for the patient families. We're also a resource for them. If the pediatricians see an issue that's coming up over and over again in their patients, and they want more information about what patients could be dealing with outside of the clinical setting in the community, or they want to know, you know, what's going on with this PHA, you know, policy that we're seeing our patients face, or what's going on with this new, you know, Medicaid plan, like we need to know more, then ask us for trainings. We love giving trainings. We love speaking about updates on information, updates on workflow, updates on the rights that families may have in certain fields. So we are a resource to the pediatricians as well. If there's ever an issue where, you know, they're like, we need to sit down and just learn more about this, then we're always happy to get on Zoom or Teams or even come to CareBots or South Philly or wherever in person and do a training and go through the forms, go through the offices that families need to visit to get these issues dealt with. So we're here to sort of be a resource to the whole community.
Well, thank you both so much for sharing more information today about medical legal partnerships and the very important work that you're doing at our CHOP Primary Care Centers in Philadelphia, and as well as the rest of the Philadelphia community. And we hope that this inspires others outside of our region and outside of our health system to perhaps set up similar medical legal partnerships, as you've clearly demonstrated the benefits that this can have to our pediatric patient population. So thank you both so much for your work and your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Primary Care Perspectives. You can download and subscribe to future episodes on iTunes or visit chop.edu/PCP podcast for a listing of all episodes. I look forward to our next chat.